You know, when you go on vacation, you tell somebody where you're going, and they say, oh, while you're on your way to this place, you need to stop and see this. And, you know, whether it's one of those, you know, the big coffee pots or this donut shop or this particular restaurant or some site along the highways that have historically been there, they go, oh, stop and see this place. And so we have been, the last couple of weeks, traveling with Paul and stopping at different cities along the way that we might learn a little bit more about what it means to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. We stopped at a city called Philippi, and we met a woman named Lydia there and a slave girl, and saw how God moved Paul to address their needs and speak to their lives. And then last week we went to a city called Athens, which is kind of, well, the cultural phenom of its time and place. And we saw what Paul did to attract the attention of those who were living their lives in that place. And today we're continuing on to one more stop on our journey with Paul. And I'm reading from the 18th chapter of the book of Acts, and I'm beginning with verse 1. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And he went to see them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for they were tent makers by trade. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. The word of the Lord. Well, here we are. We're again part of Paul's journeys to share the gospel around the world. His mission to let the world know that Jesus has come to save the world. And each stop along the way, we have seen how Paul was able to address not only the people there, but the things that were happening in the cultures and the times in which they lived. And we're continuing with that journey today. After leaving Athens, the city that's steeped in history and self-importance, Paul goes to the city of real significance. He goes to Corinth. Corinth is a bustling and thriving city. It's the real cosmopolitan city of its day, and the up-and-coming happening place of Greece or Macedonia. And no doubt it made the top 10 places of the places you wanted to go at that time. If you were on vacation, you wanted to go somewhere, you made sure that you stopped along the way at Corinth. In fact, Corinth had like four C's attributed to it. It was the capital of Achaia. Athens wasn't the capital. Corinth overshadowed it. And because of the Roman influences, the Roman kind of support of the city, Corinth kind of grew and grew and acclaimed and became the capital city of that region. And because it was the capital city, it was the cosmopolitan city, the place everybody wanted to go. If you were kind of hanging out, if you wanted to meet someone, you wanted to be someone, you found your way to Corinth. And because of that, it was also a commercially thriving city. I mean, there wasn't much unemployment. There were great exchanges from all over the world that were made there. Spices from the east, Romans goods from the west, dyed goods, dried goods, they all crossed paths. And I can even hear the voice of Ricardo Montalban saying, there was fine Corinthian leather there. Well, but as often is the case, such places were also corrupt places. And there's even a Greek word that describes that kind of atmosphere that was there. It's Corinthiazomai, which means a whoremonger. It means people were buying and selling anything and everything for a price. Everything. Everything was for sale. And everything had a price, including sexual practices. It was said that at one time in the city, there were over 1,000 slaves that were made available to just foreigners for their sexual pleasure. And we know from later passages that what we're sharing today, that Paul saw that his work was cut out for him, and he stayed in that city for about 18 months. And we have two great epistles that are passed down to us to give us the kind of information about what life was like in Corinth. We have 1st and we have 2nd Corinthians. what it was like to live there, to work there, and to celebrate Jesus in that midst of that place. But all that doesn't come from our text today. This is the first stop on our tour, and we're not spending 18 months here, but we're going to spend a little bit of time to examine what Paul did when he arrived at the city. Paul arrives in verse 1. In verse 2, he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. Now, in fact, Claudius had sent the Jews out of Rome in about 49 A.C.E., because there was this conflict in the city between Jews and what some Roman historians call the Crestus or the Christus. Not sure really how that kind of word goes together, but nonetheless, all the Jews were blamed for the conflict and they were banished from the city of Rome, and Aquila and Priscilla were out with them. And we learn from the verse that Aquila was from Pontus, a province on the Black Sea. And that probably would go unnoticed by Luke, except, well, kind of there seems to be two connections that we might have missed earlier. The region is one of those that's mentioned in Acts chapter 2, verse 9, as being present on the day of Pentecost. There were men from Pontus present when the Holy Spirit descended upon the disciples, and Peter stood up and gave that great address and filled the place with the presence and power of the Holy Spirit, and there were 3,000 who came to know Christ on that day. This and the conflict perhaps kind of combine in a way that say to us that maybe Aquila was a believer, that he was a Jewish believer, a Jew had come to follow Christ Jesus. And we know that Priscilla, and Paul would later call her by her formal name, Prisca, were there at present at Rome when the banishment occurred, and they were on their way out. And the connections that Paul made with them here at Corinth were important for him later. If you follow and read the Epistle to Romans, the last part of the Roman epistle, Paul talks about greeting Prisca and Aquila. And the same is true with Corinthians and 1 Timothy. These people were good friends of Paul over time. But it all starts here in Corinth. Now, what happens is that God knows that we make those connections. And what happens is that when we come to make those connections, several things are important. God ultimately knows that we want to kind of get to know him. God calls us to get to know him. God knows that he wants to draw us to him, but we are often not sure of how that all happens. And when we examine what's going on with Paul and these good friends, later to be good friends, we know that God does an amazing kinds of things. Instead of God kind of waiting for us to come to him, God does the most amazing thing of all. He sends his son on a mission to embrace us and to greet us and to bring us closer to him. God doesn't exactly sit back and wait for us to come to him. He sends Jesus to make it possible. And he puts his eyes on us. You see, when we look at that second verse that we read, not only does Paul meet Prisca and Aquila, he goes out to see them. He went out to see them, says the verse. In other words, he's kind of putting his eyes right on them. Well, that's what we think. It really means he went out to visit with them. He went out to spend some time with them. And it's kind of like what we do is totally opposite. You know, we hear about somebody and we go, well, we'll just wait till they come to us. We'll wait, kind of, they'll get to know us and they'll be fine and that'll be a great thing to do. But really, what Paul had a habit of doing was going out and meeting people and spending some time with them. He went out to see them. And I know that's kind of hard for us to do today. I mean, it isn't complicated, but it's a common kind of experience that kind of gives us the opportunity to do that. I mean, that it's not a complicated connection. You know, how many of you are Philly fanatics? Raise your hand if you're a Philly fanatic. Come on, be honest. Okay. Some of you are Flyer fans. Okay, Flyer fans? Okay, how about Eagle fans? Okay, I'm getting to know you just a little bit better. Now I know what sport I can focus in on. But see, what I want to do is to say, if you are one of those fans of one of those sports teams, you have an automatic connection with people who are just like you. And so you're going around, and you see somebody wearing a Philly shirt or an Eagles t-shirt, and you go, oh, you're an Eagles fan. We were out there with beanbags, so playing cornhole. With the parents and students throughout Vacation Bible School, and a couple of the parents came and said, oh, it's Eagles. That's such a great thing. You're such a great, it's just great that you have this Eagles cornhole thing. And it was just an automatic kind of connection. We started conversing about the Eagles. Now I know nothing about the Eagles. You won a Super Bowl a couple years ago, you know. But that's about as much as I can say. But it seemed to be this automatic connection. We can have automatic connections with people because we go to see where they're involved in life. We have this common connection with Flyer fans and Philly fans and Eagles fans or coffee fans or bike riding fans or particular cars or all kinds of things. When we go to see people, we see what they're doing and we visit with them at that place. And that's what that phrase means. Paul went to see them. He went in to where they were and found a common connection with them. And when he found the common connection, one of those first common connections he found was that he was able to work with them. Verse 3, and he worked with them. Now we know Paul was from Tarsus in Cilicia. And the region gets its name from the goat's skin that was there, or Cilicium. That was the title of the skin. And anybody who worked in that trade was called a tent maker, a leather maker. Not for shoe leather, that was a different kind of leather. But this particular goat skin was good for tents and sails and curtains and all kinds of things. And every good rabbi trained his son to do some kind of trade. Because in the rabbi's mind, if you weren't trading for a trade, you were training your children to steal. So you had to give them something good to do with their hands. So Paul's father gave him part of the trade. He became a tradesman of working with this leather goods. And he finds himself, Paul, talking about this in all kinds of places. In 1 Thessalonians 2 or 2 Thessalonians 3 and 2 Corinthians 11, we find Paul talking about working so that he wasn't a burden to anyone. He was using his hands, filling in the trade that he was trained to do. So when he found that he found out someone else who was working in leather goods, what did he do? He worked with them because it was a common connection. And so what we need to note was that Paul wasn't out of his comfort zone. He wasn't doing something he wasn't accustomed to doing when he went to see Aquila and Prisca. So when you go to see someone who is a Phillies fan or an Eagles fan or something like that, what you're doing is you're finding that common connection. It's not out of your comfort zone to spend time with them because you have this kind of automatic ability to find common conversation. I think sometimes we want to get beyond common connections when we share the gospel of Jesus. We are so burdened by the Spirit that we have so much to say about Jesus and what he's done for us. The first thing we want to do is we want to just blurt out, do you know God? Do you know Jesus? Do you know how God works in this world, how marvelous and wonderful God is? And what Paul does first is he says, I want a common connection. I want to see where you work. I want to see where you live. I want to sit and work with you. And while we're working, I'll tell you about Jesus. A number of years ago, a man was charged with taking over a foundry in Western Pennsylvania. And it was at a time when steel was on much of the decline in Western Pennsylvania. And I was unfortunate to live through a lot of that time period. It was a difficult time in our area. Hundreds of thousands of people were without work and families were unemployed for years and years, and it changed the landscape. But at the time he was put in charge of this small foundry, the foundry was just rife with labor and safety issues. I mean, there's all kinds of problems at the place. The foundry was actually being drained of all of its resources by a company that bought it, hoping that it would go into bankruptcy And so they would sell all of its resources and kind of recoup all of their investment. And so this man named Wayne Alderson, who was himself a newly committed Christian, was put in charge of the foundry. And when he got there, he realized he was in way over his head. He just didn't know what to do, really. And so he asked God to lead him, and God said, well, what I want you to do is I want you to get to know the people who are here. And that didn't make sense to him, because management and labor, they just didn't talk in those days. They were just, you were completely at the other opposite ends of the spectrum. And so Wayne decided he would do what God wanted him to do, and he would look down from the offices and he would see somebody. He would see a grinder, for instance, taking off all the scale off some of these big rings and things that were being made at the foundry. And he put on a pair of boots, and he went down one day and got his goggles and gloves, and he said, show me what you do. And so the grinder would show him what he'd do and say, let me try this. And they would do that. And he would work with him for a couple of hours, and then he would kind of hand him the grinder and take off his goggles and say, man, what you do is really hard. And I really appreciate what you're doing, because I don't know a lot of people that could do this. And then a couple of days later, he would go down to the place where they were pouring, and he would put on his boots and safety goggles and helmet, and he would watch them pour, and he would say, how do you do that? And he would spend the day with them and kind of work with them and learn about pouring the steel. And then he would go to another day and put on the goggles and the hat, and he would watch the crane operator pick up these big massive ingots and move things around. He said, how do you do that? Show me. And they would work these mechanical devices and all these levers and things. I said, man, what you do is so difficult, because you have to be concerned about so many safety issues and where people are all the time and what this thing weighs and where it's going to go and who's in line for all that. I said, what you do is really hard. He would do this day after day and place after place in the foundry. And in less than a year, this place that had been so full of hatred and rife with problems, people began to work with each other. And it's a wonderful story. If you read the story, is called The Miracle of Pitron. If you ever get a chance to see it on some film or actually read it in a book, it's a wonderful story of how learning to value people and what they do changes the whole culture. Really, within a year, the company became profitable. In 2 years, they were making money hand over fist. This was the company, a little foundry that the company wanted to sell because they wanted to lose money, and they were scratching their heads going, how is that possible? And they were making labor agreements because they were working with one another. And sometimes I think we forget the value of working with one another, of working with someone to gain an opportunity to share who Jesus is for us. Whether it's in the backyard or at the food pantry or wherever you go or wherever they are, working with them can make a difference. He went to them, he worked with them. And verse 4 says, and he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath. And for me, that means he worshiped with them. C.S. Lewis said, worship is one of those processes through which God communicates his presence and his beauty to men. Let me say that again. Worship is one of those processes through which God communicates his presence and his beauty to men. Worship is the place where we encounter and we engage God. And we come because it's a safe place for us. It's the sanctuary for us. It's why we sit in the same pew each week, glorifying God, centering our life on Jesus. Worship is the time and place of our joining and our transferring out of ourselves. We met God here. We want to meet God again here in the same time, in the same place, in the same way, because we know God is here. And we're telling that story every time we get together with one another, even if we don't realize it. Because encountering God requires that all of life be lived to the praise and glory of God. And when we worship, when we are declaring God's praise and glory, we're telling a story of profound significance to those who are around us. Andrew Purvis, is a professor, former professor of theology at Pittsburgh Seminary, and I got to know Andrew a couple different occasions, a couple different settings, and he tells a story of how he came to know the Lord. He said, I arose to leave the room one day when I was a child, and I suddenly stopped on my mother's chair. He said, there was no crisis in my life, but one was about to happen. He said, rather strangely, I said to my mother, I'm bored with my life. And looking back, he said, I'm not sure why I said that, or even if it was true. But I hadn't seen her in worship, except at weddings and funerals, she being a Roman Catholic and Presbyterian in Edinburgh, Scotland. And so she replied, just as she looked at me that day, why don't you go to church next Sunday? Doesn't every mother say that? But one can only wonder, he says, if the mystery of God's grace that works in redeeming purpose and the deep wisdom of a mother's love for her child. He said, I went that day, and I sat in the back pew amid the scattering of people mostly older than I, anticipating boredom and hoping nobody would notice me. And the minister, wearing this traditional Scottish Protestant clergy vestments, walked up to the pulpit, and he stood up and he leaned over and he said, let us worship God. And Andrew said, at that moment, his words came cannonading into my life. He said, I'm not really sure I heard an audible voice of the Lord that day, but nonetheless, I am confident even today that God spoke to my heart deeply and intimately as a teenager. At that moment, I realized I could have a relationship with God. And it changed forever who I am. Worship can be a place where we encounter God and where the stories of our lives bring life to those who come seeking Jesus. Paul went to them. He worked with them. He worshiped with them. And he witnessed to them. In every way, all the time, we know that Paul is sharing Jesus. And it's important to note here that Paul is giving meaning to the first three things that he was doing. He was seeing them, he was working with them, he was worshiping with them, and then he began to tell them why he was doing all of those three things. It's because of who Jesus is, Paul would say. Let me tell you about who Jesus is and why he's important to me. The end of verse 4 reads, he tried to persuade Jews and the Greeks. And it's interesting that the end of verse 4, there are some verbs. And those of you who are linguists, I know there are a few. There's the Kohatic imperfect, he began. And the conative imperfect, he tried. And the implication of those forms of the verb says he wasn't successful at that moment, but it didn't stop him. There are no clear results at that moment, but it didn't stop him. He made the effort. He kept trying. We just heard Linda talk about being with the kids all week long and giving the message of Jesus coming to save the world and each individual life, and the gospel was presented to each and every child. I heard several of those opportunities. So I bore witness to the fact that it was done here at Vacation Bible School. But we're not definitely sure that one or two or five or six responded to that gospel. But we've got to do it anyway. We've got to bear witness. We've got to keep trying. We can't just say, well, we did it one time and we're just tired, or we just give up, or just somebody else's turn to do this. No, we've got to keep going. We've got to keep telling people about Jesus. Where we work, how we work, where we see people, where we visit with people, all along the way. And here's the news. But everybody in Vacation Bible School will tell you, we're not done yet. We're not done yet. The important part is that Paul began, and he tried to explain to the Jews and Greeks every day and every way he is bearing witness. And there are times I would like to be done. I like to finish a job. I like to see these huge measures of success along the way. I want to ride the way of life to be on one of success and celebration at some point. But here's the thing. Not long ago, I took a ride with my grandson. We were on the train at Stroudsburg. You know, Pennsylvania Historical Railroad Museum, there's that little train that goes beside it and has one of the old engines on it. And my grandson loves trains. He just loves trains. And so my son said, well, come, we're going to do a ride. And so we went on a ride together, and we went out, and we went back, and he was holding his ears, not sure he really liked the ride along the way. And, you know, you get to the end, and the conductor says, well, we're reaching the last stop. And I said to myself, but we'll be back again, won't we? And I said to my son, we're coming back, aren't we? And he said, yep, we're coming back. We're going to do this again. As believers, we're going to do this again. We're going to keep telling people about Jesus. We're going to keep inviting them to worship with us. We're going to keep working with them. We're going to keep visiting them so that we have the opportunity for them to see and to hear from us who Jesus is. Sometimes when we look at these stories and stops of Paul's journeys along the way, we say, well, it's just that was his time, that was his place. It's not really about us, but it is. It's telling us exactly what we need to do today to share the good news of Jesus. And I hope you're going to do that this week.